Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Kick the cane! It's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century from I Love Lucy to News Radio. I am your TV guide, Brett White, and I'm also a reporter-producer for Decider.com, and this week I am joined by a writer with Botnick Studios and also a co-host of the Rate and Subscribe podcast, Nat Towson. Hello, Nat!
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming by and venturing out to Queens.
Well, it's very exciting to be this deep in Queens.
Yeah, making that treacherous Brooklyn to Queens transit.
I haven't been here, this deep into Queens since 2 days ago when a Lyft driver abducted me and drove me to Forest Hills instead of South Brooklyn.
Oh, those are very different places.
Yeah, so when I got here today, I was like, oh, I've been here. I've seen this place.
Yeah, but welcome to the podcast. I'm assuming that you are a sitcom enjoyer.
Oh, yeah.
Of some sort.
It's definitely
I know at one point we talked a lot about Fernwood Tonight.
Oh yeah, I love that show. Fernwood Tonight and America Tonight, which I think is the second season. Mm-hmm. I think that was the Mary Hartman was the lead in.
Yes. It was all a spinoff, right? It was like a shared universe kind of thing.
Sort of, yeah. And Mary Hartman started, and it was a daily sitcom. I mean, it was like a soap opera,
yeah.
but what was amazing about it was that it was produced so that it came out 5 times a week, and then they started doing Fernwood Tonight, which was Martin Mull's character and yeah. Fred Willard, and
great cast,
amazing, and they're so funny, and it is like, I think, largely improvised or at least skeleton scripted, but
yeah.
They're so good that it's everything has such a concise like premise and then like a nice like little button punchline at the end of every bit, and then they cut to commercials. It's very funny and very subtle, and I have DVDs of Mary Hartman,
yeah,
but I've never seen any release of Fernwood Tonight. I had to download some of the worst like triple encoded video files that had been like crunched into like an AVI and then get them into other software format just so I could or other file format just so I could watch them. But I think I actually tweeted at Fred Willard once, and I was like, when are we getting that Fernwood Tonight DVD? And
he's like, happen.
I think it's hung up in some sort of rights issue.
Is it probably like music rights?
I don't even remember them having specific music for the show, but he said there's some ownership or distribution thing that is causing a problem with it. It could happen,
just
maybe.
Preventing us from enjoying some peak Martin Mull.
Oh my god, yeah.
I don't know, I think Clue was probably peak Martin Mull for me, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, in terms
but
of...
But Martin Mull and Fred Willard improvising 5 times a week is pretty incredible.
That's all you want.
Yeah.
I wanted to do... I got listener mail, and the nature of the question, I think, places it well right here.
Mm-hmm.
So, the listener mail, at Mighty Scrub Lord on Twitter has asked, here's a question, Brett and whichever guest you have on, so that's you rolled the dice.
Wow, I feel so personal that they wanted my opinion. That's so nice.
Yeah, what was your first sitcom that you can remember? I'm assuming that means, like, which one did you watch first? Mm.
So the one that was the real game changer for me and that really, like, defined the way that I watch TV was The Simpsons. I think that was the show. It was not the first sitcom I remember, which I'll get to very shortly. But I think, you know, you were asking, am I a big sitcom guy? Because I know you love 70s, 80s, 90s sitcoms.
Yes. Yeah,
and
yeah.
I do too, but I also get very frustrated with the trappings of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm also a big fan of modern comedy television shows, especially ones that have had a little bit more freedom to break the mold. But I think that comes from, I distinctly remember 1993, my dad goes, hey, go turn on Channel 5. And I was like, okay. And he wasn't in the room. He's like, go turn that on. Just go see. And I sat there and The Simpsons was on. And I was like, is this? I'd seen ads for it. I didn't know what it was. I was like, is this what you wanted to put on? And he was like, yeah. I think that's one of like the coolest moves that my dad did in raising me. Because I watched it and I didn't get what was going on at all. I didn't know who the characters were, but I thought it was so funny. And suddenly the next day I was part of a conversation at the lunch table I hadn't been part of. And then I was immediately obsessed, down to the point where my brother and I would tell time based on how how much time it was until The Simpsons would be on television.
Oh,
so
man.
Pre or post or during. And that would drive our parents insane, of course. But I think the thing is that drilled into me, I think The Simpsons is this really great middle ground between being genuinely sentimental. It's like a show where what the characters do matter. At least seasons like 1 through 6, I would say, what happens to the characters does matter to you as you watch it. And there are real emotional moments with them. But it also is doing its absolute best to undermine the sitcom format, and its absolute best to like make fun of those trappings and not get caught in them. And so I think that being my defining sitcom has always, when I watch a show, like, I mean, we'll get into this with Frasier, but I've watched hundreds of episodes of Frasier at this point, I would say, because there are.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll be like, I hate this show. It's like, really? Then why are you on season 9?
Yeah.
And the reason is because sometimes it's just like, oh, are we doing another gay panic episode? Are we doing another, like, oh, I know where this is going. But that's at the same time, you know, some of those shows are really amazing. And some of them, there's really great writing and, you know, it's writing to a form. And there's a lot to be said for that. But I just think that The Simpsons implanted in me a slight frustration with, you know, the writers of The Simpsons who are 20 years older than me, whatever they grew up watching and their frustrations.
They're responding to that.
Right. Yeah. They're responding to, like, annoying 70s sitcom tropes, but they trained me to be hyper aware of them, I think.
Which is the exact opposite of my parents, who forbade me from watching The Simpsons, so I've still never really watched it.
Really?
I've seen dozens of episodes, but you know, if you don't, I mean, I still do believe that if you don't love a thing when you are under the age of 12, you will never be able to form that intense of a bond. Like, you were always going to love The Simpsons more than I ever can.
I think that's probably true, but it's also because I was watching it as it was coming out.
Exactly.
I was talking about the world as we knew it. You might actually enjoy it now as being like, whoa, this is like super early 90s, like culture, and it definitely like a blast of a certain kind of sarcasm that isn't popular anymore.
Right.
And I think you might enjoy it like that. But I definitely think, it didn't feel at all dated at the time. And watching, you know, we'd watch the episodes in syndication, but also the new ones every Sunday as they came out. And there being a new Simpsons episode was like an event. And it was like, what is it going to be about?
Yeah.
That, I feel like, is something that you won't have watching it.
Yeah.
But I will say, I have rewatched that show from the beginning every few years since I started watching it. Not necessarily like started episode 1 go all the way through, but I've done deep dives every few years. And one thing that's really rewarding about that show is that literally every time I go back to an old episode I haven't seen in a long time, there are jokes in it that I didn't get, not when I was a kid, but the last time I watched
it. That's good.
And that's a thing that I think would make you'd go, wow, this is dense. There'd be a lot of references that you'd get that I wouldn't get, stuff like that.
I need to. We will do it on the show at some point. My first sitcom is the exact opposite, because I did a little bit of research trying to figure out when my first one was, and I know I started watching TV for real in the 91-92 TV season.
Okay.
Because I remember I watched Home Improvement from the beginning, and I watched TGIF after Full House had moved off of it. Like, I never watched TGIF with Full House. So, and that is the 1991 fall TV season.
Yeah, so I think you got in a year or two earlier than I did. I distinctly remember. So before The Simpsons, I watched Full House because I think it was inane enough that my family was like, I don't have to watch over his shoulder. They're never going to say anything challenging on this show.
Horrible on this show.
It's not going to be like an abortion episode of Full House or anything. Like, someone skinned their knee and someone else was mean to them about it. Like, he can handle this.
Yeah.
You know, that was a show that you could put your kids in front of and not worry about it. But little things like that. But I never was like really into, I never really followed a show. But I will say that my mom was really into Roseanne and The Wonder Years.
Okay.
So before The Simpsons, that was like my show. Those were shows I got to watch with her. And they both have like a little window into a version of America that I wasn't really familiar with. And so they were really fascinating to me.
I probably... So I looked also like Clarissa Explains It All and Salute Your Shorts also debuted in 91. So 91 is like this watershed year for me in television. Mm-hmm. But then Hey Dude debuted in 89, and I watched Hey Dude on Nickelodeon. So that might be my first sitcom. But then thinking about that, think about what you just said about your parents watching. I know I watched Golden Girls and I Love Lucy with my mom. So also those might be other contenders for my first sitcom. Because I was obsessed with Nick at Night for as long as I can remember, which is why this podcast exists.
I definitely, see, that's the thing. I think it's a different experience. That's why I gave multiple answers to this
question.
Well,
there's like the first one that I like legit loved and was obsessed with, like in a mature intellectual way, is probably Friends. Like I was in fifth grade, so I was 10. I was 10 when Friends came out. So I think like 10 when Friends starts is like a perfect age of like, this is what I think adults are like. This is...
I don't understand how money works.
Yeah.
This diversity is not going to become important to me for a while.
But it was like to be 10 and watching a show where they were like having sex and talking about sex. Right, and at 10, you're more aware of kind of what sex might be than you are when you're like 6, when I was watching Full House. So there was a little bit of a difference. Like I think Friends was the first show that I bought the soundtrack. I had a Friends t-shirt that I wore in sixth grade. One day, and all the other guys said that that was a girl show, so I never wore it again, because masculinity is a prison, you little shits.
Like, yeah, I think that was a thing, like, in my school, you either liked The Simpsons or Friends, and if I look back, I think it was most of the girls liked Friends, most of the boys liked The Simpsons, but there is still a part of me, like, my brother's girlfriend, it's her favorite show,
yeah,
and I'm like, she's fantastic, I love her, and there's still a little part of me in the back of my head that's just like, but it's not that funny, right? Like, The Simpsons is better, right? Like, but there's something wrong with
apples
you because
oranges.
You like...
Apples and oranges.
No, I'm just saying I have this ingrained suspicion of anyone who loves Friends, which is totally irrational. But because there's a part of me at age 9 that was like, but The Simpsons is for people who are really smart.
Yeah,
it's
hard to... we'll get into this. Let's go on and get into this. This week we're traveling to October 8th, 1998. Ants ruled the box office. I Don't Want to Miss a Thing by Aerosmith topped the charts, and NBC aired the Frasier episode Dial M for Martinet. You must have seen Dial M for Martin before today.
I saw it yesterday and a little bit also this morning. I've watched this episode 3 times in the past 24 hours. 2.5 times, which makes me feel a little insane, but I did also see this episode in my great Frasier from the beginning watch-through. I don't think I'd ever seen it on TV.
Did you discover Frasier through a massive rewatch?
That's how I got really into it. I had seen occasional episodes of it. My grandmother watched it occasionally.
Oh, wow.
I remember her saying, oh, this show's pretty good. They say it's the smartest show on TV or something. And then we watched it and I didn't really get it.
Yeah.
It was probably an early season. I was at my grandparents' house. I remember this. And I was probably... especially earlier on, I feel like they're much denser with the high culture references.
Yeah,
and
it gets a lot more farcical as it goes on. But still, while like trying to balance the farce and the high culture references.
It gets a little more screwball as it goes on, I think. Yeah. Like it's
like
definitely farcical. Yeah.
Specifically.
Yeah, this one, and we'll get into that. I think there's definitely trappings in the first season of Frasier that I'm glad they do away with. Like, Daphne's psychic visions is like, all right, you're really going to keep talking about that. There's a few things in there that I think they get past and it actually is for the better with the show. But I also think that it's a lot more naturalistic early on. The struggle between Frasier and Martin being the central tension of the show is very real in the first season.
Yes.
But to answer your question, I'd seen spot episodes as a kid, didn't really get it, but I kind of like the tone of it. I was like, oh, this is interesting. I've never seen a show that looks like this, but never got into it on my own until probably in the past 3 or 4 years. I'd seen, you know, I was somewhere where I didn't have my Chromecast plugged in or whatever. Someone's house who had cable and ended up watching random episodes of Frasier, and I forget exactly what got me into it, but then my girlfriend and I started at the beginning watching.
Which is a task.
Yeah.
I did that last... Oh, wait, I'm sorry.
I had to amend my story. I know what got me into watching it, which was that I was looking for Christmas episodes of TV shows to watch.
And this one has some great ones.
Yeah, and that's one of
a
my...
lot of great ones,
my Christmas
actually.
Tradition is in the month or so leading up, this is my adult Christmas tradition, not my family's. I watch Christmas movies and specifically Christmas sitcom episodes, which I personally really love. And I hadn't seen much Frasier, but I knew that it had a couple. And I watched There are at least three really strong
Frasier ones. Frasier Grinch is probably my favorite, where he has to buy the action figure for his son, who because he wants like a laser robo-geek or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It's not something that Frasier would buy for him.
This really intense father-son moment of like, you have to get gifts they want and not gifts you want them to want.
Right,
and
right.
And it cuts to this core of like, what Frasier and Martin and him having to like buy gifts for a son he doesn't understand, and it was like, this is too real.
It's
I did a Frasier episode. Me and Winston Knoll talked about the episode The Innkeepers. The Innkeepers, where Frasier and Niles buy a restaurant for only one episode.
Oh yeah, and then it's just gone after that. And it's also
it's like a season two, but it's like one of the goofiest episodes, and it's pretty delightful.
And like a year maybe passes in the course of that episode. Yeah, it's unclear what's going on.
So we talk about that. I think that's one of the first episodes. So definitely go back and listen to that. So like my truncated history of Frasier, because I get into it more in that one, is that I did not watch the show as a child, 10-year-old or whatever, because I'm from the South and we are anti-intellectual, and this show like marketed itself as like the intellectual sitcom. And so that like Southern like, well, I don't like that, I like Friends, like that, you know, that played into it. And then the fact that it won the Emmy every year for its first, I think, 5 years.
Oh, you were mad at it because you liked Friends
better. Loved me some award shows. And the fact that it kept beating Friends and Seinfeld, which are the shows that as a middle schooler I was obsessed with. Mm-hmm. I love Friends and Seinfeld. And I hated it. But when it hit its 100 episodes and got into syndication, I've seen, you know, those first 100 episodes a lot just through it being on at, like, you know, 5 o'clock on Fox or whatever.
Will say, by the way, that in my New York City middle school, Seinfeld was all on the cool side. That was the Simpsons side. You were allowed to like Seinfeld and be like the Simpsons. But only certain people's parents would let them watch Seinfeld. Because that was that was a little more explicitly about sex, I think.
It's like my parents would not let me watch The Simpsons, but they were like, I guess also The Simpsons came out when I was a child. And I think my parents felt, because I remember them saying, like, just because it's a cartoon doesn't mean you can watch it.
Yeah, parents didn't know what to do with it. It was weird. It was like, I think The Simpsons was more dangerous than those other shows. Like, partially because they didn't know what it was. Yeah.
But I discovered...
It was more subversive, too.
You know, being an adult and getting... Like, having Netflix where Frasier is just around. I mean, it's on Amazon, Hulu, and Netflix. Like, And I think it also might be on CBS All Access. Like,
yeah,
the
so
rights
take your dad's password and put it into any of those services.
Like, everywhere. So you end up watching Frasier. And then after the election, Frasier was, like, the third sitcom. I was like, I'm going to watch every episode of this. And we watched all 11 seasons in a month.
Oh my god.
Like, there were some Saturdays where I would watch, like, a season.
I mean, that was a rough month.
I would watch like 24.
Yeah, that's around the time when I watched a lot of it, too.
And the reason that it hit me so hard is the Frasier and Martin relationship, which, a couple episodes back when I addressed John Mahoney's passing, I got into it about how, like, it is very personal to me. Like, that father-son dynamic, it was an emotionally fraught time after the election, and then watching Frasier, where it's like a high farce, but then out of nowhere, an episode will take a hard turn, and all of a sudden it is like super sincere and about like deep father-son issues.
Well, do you remember that one where they have a costume party, dresses your hero, and Niles dresses as Martin, and it just ends with Martin angry at him?
How dare you think I would ever be ashamed of you?
Yeah.
And it doesn't get resolved. I mean, like, there's a joke at the end of it. They like... Because Martin or Frasier's trying to take off the wig, and all the kids are like, "He eats brains."
Oh, right, yeah.
But the Martin plotline doesn't get resolved.
The Frasier thing that comes back is like just a callback joke. It's not like the major plotline.
So like, it's really resonant. But yeah, let's move on to this week on Must Have Seen TV. We're going to be talking about the Frasier episode "Dial In for Martin." It is the third episode of season 6, and was written by Rob Greenberg and directed by Ken Lampkin. Here's how Netflix describes the episode. Niles isn't too thrilled at the prospect of his father moving in until he realizes that Daphne is part of the package. Nat, how accurate is that description?
I would say, especially given the extremely relative scale of how good Netflix episode descriptions are, that's a solid description of the
at least
motivating...
the first half, like the motivation.
Yeah, that is definitely, and we can get into this. This episode has almost a second plot that comes in much later than most sitcom plots.
It heightens so extremely that it becomes...
It's like a
worthy,
new A-plot.
It becomes worthy of its own Netflix separate description, in a way.
But I will say, in general, sometimes these Netflix descriptions do not... they do not have the inciting incident in them. They do not necessarily name the characters who are at play. So I would say to whatever deeply underpaid 22-year-old who wrote episode descriptions for 200-something episodes of Frasier,
40-something.
Good job with this one.
Good. So we can go linearly if we want to. We can also just talk around it, because basically what I realized while watching this episode again is that this episode contains my three biggest Frasier questions.
Okay.
So,
I think it has my three biggest Frasier pet peeves in it, but also I think I know what your questions, at least two of them are.
My number one question is...
Can I guess?
Oh, how big is Frasier's apartment? Because it's a thing that comes up every now and then. But this one, since this one is all about... So, like, maybe I should have started with the other question. So let's go back.
There's a lot to unpack
here. There's a lot. So, the whole impetus for the thing, the reason that Frasier and Martin are butting heads, like, six seasons into the show, is because Frasier is newly jobless. He lost his job at the end of season 5. And this is early season 6. So he's still unemployed. And so is Roz.
Right. They fired off the whole staff at KCL. Yeah. And replaced them with a Spanish language. Questionably racially sensitive Spanish language format station.
I get. So like they're butting heads because Frasier's home all the time. So my bigger question, I guess we'll start with this one. So you already know one of my questions. My other big question is, how much money does Frasier have? Which I guess is tied into the fact of, how can he afford this huge apartment that overlooks the Space Needle, a view that is actually physically impossible, that people have discovered through going to Seattle like, that view is, like, from a mountain. So, like, it doesn't exist. But it's, like, how much money does he have? Because I remember specifically being, like, he never in the early part of season 6 is concerned about making more money, getting a new job, paying any bills. Like, he looks like a trash person in the season premiere, like, he's wearing sweats and hasn't shaved. But after that, he's fine.
He's never in any severe, financial distress.
No. And so then again, all so expensive. So these are two questions rolled into one that have to deal with the plot. How big is that apartment that he can afford it? And also, why isn't he worried about money?
So I've thought about this a lot. And I think that's, you know, that's a major sitcom question. You want to talk about Friends. One of the reasons I can't get into Friends is I grew up in New York. And I'm like, none of these people can afford anything. Their lifestyle is impossible.
The apartment is rent control.
Yes.
Which they established in the series finale.
Oh, really? Is that late?
Yeah.
I remember in How I Met Your Mother, it's like season 4, where they're like, we lucked into this rent controlled apartment. Who's going to keep it? I was like, they knew people were annoyed with
this
that.
This is tangential, but I firmly believe Chandler and Joey's apartment is realistic. It is just bigger because it has to be bigger for, like, cameras to move around.
Right. But I think that's always the problem, is apartments are going to look bigger because they have to be sets.
But anyways, Frasier's apartment, like, I've seen blueprints online.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, it is shaped like a crazy, like, bunch of Tetris pieces on top of each other.
It is very weird the way the hallways go off in different directions.
Yeah.
Some condos buildings are weird like that, though, because people want to have more windows or they want to have more space. So
knock down walls. I don't know.
Anyway.
So Frasier has a bedroom, Daphne has a bedroom, Martin has a bedroom. That's three.
Yes.
But then
we don't see either Daphne's or Martin's until season... It's way later. Anytime they add a new set on Frasier, I'm like,
ooh,
yeah, what's this?
Well, but then there's also, he has an office too, apparently. Because there's an episode where he says, put that in my office. And I'm like, it's a 4-bedroom?
Well, okay, so in season 9, Daphne discovers when some sort of repairman or someone comes that other people, Cam Winston upstairs, has a washer dryer in his apartment that starts leaking down into Frasier's apartment. Daphne has been led to believe that they are not allowed to have in-apartment washer dryers, and she's been doing all the laundry in the basement. And then the repairman, whoever comes, is like, oh yeah, you got a hookup in that room where you keep all your hats. And Daphne makes some crack about, like, oh, I'm sorry, I couldn't do laundry because we had to have a hat museum. So there's, like, another room that Frasier just keeps his stuff in. There's a room where he has the tape of every episode, but I think that's his bedroom. It's just he has the cabinet in his bedroom where he has the tape of every episode. He maybe has an office. That could be, like, a hall, a nook in the hall where he's hanging all the hats or whatever. Oh. But there's a lot of space that we haven't even seen.
It's also, like, the tiniest kitchen, comparatively.
That introduces another of my absolute favorite Frasier devices, which is that you can't hear anyone in the kitchen.
Right, because there's no wall.
It's so open, even... and then one of the walls is a two-way bookshelf that you can see through.
Yes.
There's zero sound baffling, but anyone's...
I actually think there is more kitchen where the camera is positioned, because there's, like, a island. But
right,
because
it comes from one side of
there's
the
another. There's the other side of the island that we never see.
Yeah,
but
well, that's the weird three-camera sitcom thing, which is you have to piece together what you think a room looks like based on... two-thirds to three-quarters of it.
My third question, which is also part of this, is Daphne's job.
That was the one I was going to guess. What is Daphne's job?
Because, so like, and when I did my Frasier rewatch, I put all these questions on Facebook and people like hashed it out. Like one of my friends was like, who worked in radio, is like, here is the starting rate of a disc jockey in a like big market. And it was like, none of this makes sense. But like Daphne is the physical therapist. She's a live-in physical therapist.
Are we going to address how much money Frasier has?
How do you have a guess?
Okay, so here's my theory on this. Because I've thought about this a lot, and I was going to say, being able to afford apartments in sitcoms never makes sense. And you're right. Part of it is the thing that in order to shoot in a place, you have to make it look even bigger than the usable space, and therefore double everything, and therefore it's going to look too big. But they address Frasier's wealth a number of times in the show, and I don't think that it's necessarily realistic, but I think that there are some things that we can take away from it. Frasier and Niles' mother is wealthy.
Oh, right.
That's one of the things that we forget, is that Martin is the outlier in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole big thing about how his mother was high class, but she never made Martin feel low class. He says that he's like, that's the classy thing to do, is you never once make people feel different. And he talks about dating their mother and feeling out of place.
Right.
So this is has been a sort of cross-class romance. We know that Frasier and Niles grow up the way that they grow up because of their mom.
Right.
They're not just these weird... We see them as, like, 8-year-olds.
Hester Crane!
Yeah. And we see them as 8-year-olds, and they're wearing blazers to school and tie. They're into opera. Like, all the stuff they're into now, they've always been into. And if you're being realistic about that... That is because they were raised with not only the financial ability to that, but someone who is in that culture. Because someone who's new money would not raise their kids to like opera.
No.
So their mother is from a wealthy family
right,
line.
Right, the Crane. Well, whatever her maiden name was.
Right.
That's a rich family.
And she was a doctor also.
Right.
So I think of geneticist, I believe.
Oh,
she's I forget exactly, but she was maybe some sort of behavioral psychologist, actually, because she's experimenting on rats that were named Niles and Frasier, we learn at one point. So she is... at least a research scientist. She's not, she's making decent money,
right.
Obviously. She has ancestral wealth. They both grow up high class, so, like, culturally speaking. But another thing that we see early on in the show is that Niles is wealthier than Frasier.
Yeah, because he...
Significantly.
Yeah.
Like, Niles' apartment is so much bigger than Frasier.
Which we see in the set, like, when... Because the main reason... So, like, to talk about the plot a little bit,
Oh, yeah, this episode.
Yeah, basically, Martin has, like, lunch with Roz, who's sweating it a little bit more not having a job, like, because she's a normal person, and she brings up, like, why don't you...
Well, maybe you need to take a little break from each other. Have you ever thought about, well, I don't know, staying with Niles for a while?
Out of the frying pan into the fire, huh?
Which is also kind of her, like, nice way to dig and, like, screw over Niles, because Niles and Roz have a rivalry. A little bit of a...
Really no reason ever is established for that,
from just... Yeah, this is what we talked about.
They're
on
just
my,
two personalities that are very different.
On my previous Frasier episode, of just like a lot of the personality of Roz is a lot of tell, don't show. Because a lot of people talk about how like she's such a slut and so easy, but like no, not really. You never see her with that many men. Like Frasier is the one who is a like creepy, oversexed person.
Yeah, but he's also not as good at it. It seems like
Roz just seems like a normal person.
It is a thing that makes me a little uncomfortable in the show. Like looking back, like Roz is much closer to like adult women I know now who have like a healthy relationship with their own sexuality that doesn't feel desperate but feels active and like
and
she's like sex positive and she's
always
not like
making fun of her.
Yeah, and I mean I think this is a tough thing with Frasier where I feel like if you look at it that Frasier and Niles are always supposed to be the butt of the joke. They're always wrong. I think the show gives them a little too many, and it's because they're the protagonists, but I think they get a few too many wins.
Right.
Because then it makes you think that their way is right. Like, they get a dig in on Roz that works too well or whatever.
Yeah.
There's little things like that. If you play the, like, homophobia, like the gay panic episodes, which, as I've said, there are too many for me. But if you play those, and I've heard David Hyde Pierce say this in interviews where he's like, the whole point was to make fun of homophobia, was to make fun of how You know, these characters who are, you know, might read as gay to other people also, like, were so full of themselves, so unself-aware, or not even unself-aware, but are just so paranoid that, like, that it's mocking their homophobia. I don't know that that always works for me. And the slut-shaming Roz part does not always
really
work for
not.
Me. Because she usually sticks up for herself, but the show doesn't do a good enough job of being like, and she's the one who's right, and Frasier sucks.
She doesn't get enough plot lines on her own that really make her as, like, formidable of a character. Like, I feel like throughout all 11 seasons, the show is always still trying to figure out ways to bring... Like, in this episode... There is no radio scene. They don't have a job. So it's like, well, Martin has to be... Martin is friends with her. Like, they do relate. Like, they are more, mm-hmm. like, on a class level. Like, they are kind of on equal playing field.
Mm-hmm.
They see each other in themselves, which is why they meet up at the coffee shop. And then there's this great... Like, I really love the structure of this episode. So there's a lot of, like, layers and people screwing each other over where... So Roz tells Martin you should move in with Niles because you won't be with Frasier. And Maris is gone and Maris didn't want you there. And then when Niles comes, he's like, absolutely not. Oh, no, you have Eddie. We can't, we don't have room for dogs.
No, oh, no, no.
And then Martin is like, we'll have to find a place with me and Eddie and Daphne. Okay, so then Niles is like, well, I'll talk to the landlord because he wants to, you know, basically entrap Daphne in his apartment 24/7. But then as soon
which as a romantic plan does not actually seem like the best course of action, but that's not addressed.
So then the thing I love about this is so, like, Niles is like, yes, you can move in because Daphne can come. But then because Niles' apartment has stairs, it's a two-level apartment, which we've seen Niles' apartment before this, correct?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So I love that because then that makes Daphne think, well...
Wait a minute. I was hired as Mr. Crane's physical therapist. And if he can make it up and down that staircase of yours, he really doesn't need full-time care anymore. This is hard for me to say, but maybe it's time I moved on.
And therefore, like, it all falls apart. Like, I love, like, the layers of
Yeah, exactly. Like, the one thing forces the next. And that brings up two things. One, quickly, back on Niles and Frasier's money, when Niles and Maris start breaking up, Maris freezes Niles' accounts, and all of a sudden he has no spending money. He still has the apartment and all the nice things, but he can't go to the wine club.
He has to move into that shitty apartment for a little while.
Oh, he does, right? Yeah. He doesn't even have the apartment. And there's even an episode where Frasier really bluntly asks him, did you marry Maris for her money?
Yeah.
And Niles kind of won't answer him about it. And I think there is part of the implication there is that they grew up accustomed to wealth and this, like, really ritzy upper crust. Like, Niles sees Frasier as slumming it by being on the radio. Like, by not being... the other thing is, like, Niles has run a... I think we have to understand that before the show started, they've both been running psychiatric practices... Before Frasier's on the radio, he's a psychiatrist. They've been making very good money for a long time, but I think that,
like,
Niles...
Frasier was, like, making all that money in Boston, which is, like, it's a big city.
Right. And Niles, I think, has just been consistently making a ton of money for a long time.
Because we see his office later on, and it's fucking nice.
And he has wealthy clients. Yeah, like, he is not just a psychiatrist, he's, like, a upper-tier psychiatrist.
There's a moment in this scene that I want to really point out where there's this really great aside, which I think is talking to how Frasier is kind of can be aware of its history and its context, which making a plot hitch upon the fact that Niles' apartment is two stories, a thing we already knew. That's super cool. Another part is when Roz has this aside when she's talking to Martin. She's like,
you know what? I just thought of something. For a while there, your daughters-in-law were Maris and Lilith. Whoa, happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And I love, like, that joke is, like, that's not a part of any game, that's not a part of a plot. It is just the kind of...
I thought that was so odd, where it's just, like, they had the character realize this thing that's always been part of the reality.
I feel like it's definitely the writer of the episode writing that scene was, like, realizing, like, oh, wait, yeah. Oh, God, Martin would hate that.
It's so funny, because it's, like, a 2 or 3 line interjection into that scene, and then the whole part about Martin moving in with Niles, like, resumes. But it's so funny, because we just don't... They just go, oh, by the way.
Yeah, I love that line.
You're right, that must have been, like, a writer being like, hey, wait a minute.
We haven't addressed this either. Like, Frasier and Niles have extreme taste in women.
Yeah.
So funny. Well, it's also weird to think, like, well, there was probably a Thanksgiving where it was Maris and Diane there.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, because
Do we meet any of the Frasier characters other than Lilith in Cheers, or do we ever see any of the extended family?
No, no. Cast? Well, I mean, John Mahoney has a guest spot in Cheers, but he's playing like a traveling like piano.
Oh, scene. He's not the.
No, he's a different character.
They were all cast with Frasier season 1.
Yes, and I also think that Perry Gilpin appears on Cheers later on as just like another character.
Perry Gilpin follows me on Twitter. Just to brag. I'm BB Newworth, for that matter. These are recent developments, but I will say, so that, I think that the fact that when they were writing Cheers, we knew about Lilith,
yeah,
but then they've introduced the Invisible Maris and like retroactively added that to the history. I feel like that's the writer being like, oh wait, now that we've added all this history to Frasier's character, that means that there was a point when those were his two. Like, which, you're right, they're figuring it out.
That is an amazing like lost episode that I just
Yeah, they just kind of, like, retconned that in there.
Because Cheers only ever did 2 Thanksgiving episodes. So there are seasons of Cheers.
Like, late in the show, right?
One is in season... It's Thanksgiving Orphans, which I did in the podcast, which I think is season 5.
Okay, yeah.
Because so it's that cast. It's my favorite cast. The cast that I have a poster of. It's the Diane Woody era.
For the home listener, Brett is gesturing to his sitcom corner.
Yeah.
The large Cheers poster.
So then we get the scene of when Martin is moving in to Niles' apartment. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's moving day. Mm-hmm. Frasier shows up to gloat. The scene opens up with Eddie doing like circles on Niles's dinner table.
Yeah. And I just a brief aside there. We were talking about this earlier off mic, but where did they find this dog?
Yeah, like, Moose, you're so good, Moose.
It's just... It's just so funny because, you know, all you ever want to say about a dog is like, what a good boy.
Yeah.
But, like, you're watching this show and you're like, wow, what a good boy.
Yeah. What a great little actor.
Obviously, there are times when they say, like, Eddie, and then they cut and you can tell that, you know, he's not reacting to the actor. He's reacting to the trainer or something just off camera. But there are so many things in that show where you watch and you're like, wow, the dog did within one shot, multiple complex actions.
Yes.
Or like,
yeah.
Oh, he stood on his hind legs. And then he went over, and then he wiped his feet on Frasier's, you know, frock or whatever, you know, like that's something that's, you know, his kimono got mud on it now. And but he was like, how did they, like, that's all one take. How did they get the dog to do
it? I love it.
He's so well trained. It's really impressive. And it's the same dog for all 11 seasons.
Well, for the first, like, 10, Moose's son comes on for, like, the last season and a half. Because, really? I mean, like, 10 years is a long time for a dog.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Because Eddie Olley, Moose was not a puppy when it started, either.
No, he's the same size, though.
So, there's, like, I think in seasons 10 and 11, oh, I can't remember what Moose's son's name is. I did a lot of research on this when I got to those later seasons.
Well, yeah,
so, like, for the complex stunts, I think it's, like, Gizmo or Zemo. No, it's not Zemo.
This is very important, I would say.
Not, oh, it's whatever. But I think like half of the episodes, it goes around. So Frasier comes over and he brings a squeaky toy. Like, he forgot. Like, he comes over with, like, I feel like Niles is super happy because Daphne's gonna be there. He's still, like, trying to hold on to that.
By this point, though, she hasn't found a job yet.
She's
called an employment agency.
Yeah.
And and there's, like, a phone call at the beginning of this scene where she's like, not even part time therapy. All, you know, very demonstrative one half of a phone call, but okay, well, I guess I'll hang in there. And Niles is like hiding his pleasure at
he's
the fact
trying
that
to like hold on to that joy, right. And then Frasier comes and squashes it by bringing Eddie's squeaky toy and also Martin's chair.
Right. So wait. So I have 2 questions here. One is that first of all, this connects to your third major Frasier question,
yes.
Which is what is Daphne's job?
Is she looking for other places to literally live?
It's really not clear.
Also the fact that she works... She got this job through an employment agency, also.
Right.
So is the employment agency fine with her having the same job for 6 years? Also, the other thing, because, like, Daphne...
That's not even the most major question.
No, we also see, like, Daphne does Frasier's laundry.
She makes them breakfast.
And makes them food.
And they complain about it all the time, how bad
her
cooking
job.
Is.
Someone, like, you know, headcanoned that, okay, well, maybe in addition to her salary, she's also living there rent-free. Like, maybe, like, Frasier is, like, paying her in the fact that, like, you get to, like, live in this mansion apartment...
yeah, I mean, I guess there's... So here's the thing.
So much.
They say explicitly in this episode that she says, I'm your dad's physical therapist, right?
Yes.
And they don't say that very often. They only say when it's necessary to the plot, but
you rarely see her working with him physical therapy.
Occasionally they do
that. She says... When she's like telling Frasier, like, oh, he's like, there's something to set up the fact that Martin like chases Eddie into the kitchen around the table and says, oh, I gotta go for your speed walking, Eddie.
Oh, like, well, no, it's Niles saying, being like,
I don't know how Dad's going to manage without you.
He doesn't need me anymore.
Nonsense. I know he puts on a brave front, but the plain truth is the man is practically an invalid.
All right, come back here.
What's he got now?
Oh, my sneaker. You give me that back or I'm not taking you for your speed walk.
You know, one of those on-screen sitcom irony gags. Yeah.
But we never see her actually doing physical therapy exercises with him.
It's there, like, are, in other episodes, you do see it.
Twice a season. Two, but, three times a season.
Well, that's the thing. I think functionally, they were like, she's a maid. She's help. She's living help. The weird thing about it is, it's not uncommon, like, say, with elder care, for someone to have a live-in aide who is a physical therapist, but also helps them with things around the house that they can't do for themselves. So if their laundry's in the basement, they can't, you know, have a hard time walking downstairs. Right, they do that kind of thing.
I mean, they have an elevator. But Frasier could.
Frasier could, and she lives with Frasier. So, I mean, it only kind of makes sense. Like, she could be, and they say physical therapist, not aide or elder care.
Yeah.
But she could theoretically be elder care and therefore helping him. But the functional way that she exists in the vast majority of episodes is that she is a maid. She does their laundry, she cleans, and she makes breakfast and sometimes other meals.
Yes.
So that is not within the purview of elder care, especially because she's like cooking for sometimes five people. Like, it's not just for, you know, if Martin needs special medical meals or something, but it's not.
I always try and justify it of like, because it is within Daphne's character, because Daphne is a pleasant, nice, kind of like eager-to-please-ish character.
Right.
So I could see, if she is making Martin some, like, toast, I could see that Daphne as a character would be like, of course I'm also going to make Frasier toast. Mm-hmm. I like him. My headcanon, I'm living here for free.
But they demand things of her all the time and are very rude at how bad she is at cooking. I will say, people have live-in aides, and it's not like, there's no, you just get paid and you have a place to stay. It's not like, and I'll do other stuff in exchange for having to live in your house. Yeah. So I would say it's a very strange, it's strange that they really never acknowledge that arrangement.
So 11 minutes into the episode, we get the turn. So like at this whole point, like we know that Niles' motivation is, I want to keep Daphne here. The only thing is I want Daphne to live in the same place with me so I can be lecherous towards her at all times.
Yes.
Or I can
What do you think Martin's motivation is here? I was curious about that in the Cafe Nervosa scene because there's a moment, and this is like a little bit of a problem I have with this episode, but there's a moment where Martin goes,
well, that's it then, because I'm not leaving Eddie.
Oh, of all the horrendous luck.
Well, thanks anyway. I guess I'll just look for a little place. Can't be too small, though, because I gotta have a bedroom for Daphne.
Do you think he's baiting Niles?
Yes, well, because he knows, right? He knows.
I don't know that they've explicitly discussed it yet.
Frasier knows,
point.
Because when they're in the apartment and...
Oh, Frasier knows for sure.
Because, like, when Niles is telling him, like, yes, he's coming to live with me, you know, you've had so much time with Dad, I really want it. The other thing I love about Frasier is the relationship of, like, brothers in relation to a father is very fascinating and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And you get Niles Martin stuff, which is rarer because Frasier is the name of the show. But then as soon as Daphne walks in, Frasier's like, oh, yeah, I got it.
Oh, it's like, an immediate turn he sees, And also, by the way, I have one brother, and we lived with our father as well, so it's always funny to watch that dynamic. I'm the older brother of two, so...
John Mahoney is playing it. I feel like he is playing it as if he knows what he's doing.
Interesting.
Because I feel like he... Because the way that he, like, lays it on is very...
So he goes, well, I guess I'll have to find... But he kind of just pauses... And I feel like when they're having him knowing that he's messing with people, they give you a little hint
it's
there.
Even
like
more,
and then when Niles says, what does he say? He goes, Daphne can move right in immediately. And they have Martin, he looks genuinely surprised. And then Niles goes, I mean, you and Daphne, of course.
I guess it's me not being clear of whether or not Martin knows.
Mm-hmm.
So if Martin does not really, like, know that Niles has a crush on Daphne, then yeah, that's probably more a... It's probably threading that needle of Martin needs to say this or really hammers to the audience that this is the like copy, this is the add-on, but he can't play it up so much that then the audience trips over into thinking he's manipulating Daphne or whatever.
Yeah, I think the problem that this is gonna come into play in the second half, so I'll say here, I think one of the problems I have with this episode is that I feel like Martin I love John Mahoney. He's a great performer. I feel like Martin is one of the less consistently written characters on this show. Sometimes he's this working class guy who doesn't get it.
Yeah.
Other times you'd be like, you know what, Frasier, when your mother and I, and he has this incredible insight. And it's not just insight born of wisdom. It's insight into the psychology behind the way that Frasier is behaving.
Right.
And then other times he doesn't get psychology at all. Other times he's not aware of what's going on. And then this other little fold to that is that he was a detective.
Yeah.
So there are times when something obvious is happening in front of him where I'm just like, wait, why? Sometimes they give him the superpower to understand why anyone is doing anything. And he is so smart.
Yeah.
He's so clever. He's not, I mean, you know, the idea is that they're making fun of Niles and Frasier for being pompous and hyper-intellectualized without being able to apply that knowledge, right? Without being able to use it to actually understand the world. And then Martin is the guy who's not hyper-intellectual. He's educated enough and he's clever and he perceives things. And then I think other times they just make him not get things when it's easier for him to not get things.
Yeah.
And I feel like in this episode, he's pretty surface level. Like, he doesn't have a lot of understanding of what's going on.
Well, it's weird, like, there's a... He's surface level in how he is looking under the surface.
Okay, yeah.
Like, because 11 minutes in, we hear an off-screen scream.
Like I told you, brother, there's simply no reason for me to stay as long as your father's so strong and healthy.
Yeah! Oh, dear God. Oh, my God, Dad!
Oh, you were right.
Yeah, what happened?
And then Martin is like, Niles kicked the cane out from under him and he fell down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, like, to put all these back-to-back-to-back is then Martin tries to sit down in his chair and Niles, like, left his garden shears there. And then, like, later Niles is showing him the, like, bathroom rail that he put on so he can help getting out. And then Martin, like, leans on it and, like, collapses. And then Niles is like, also let me know when you're taking a shower because the dishwasher can interact with it and you could get scalded.
Right, there's all these little things that sound ominous, like Niles is finding a way to... And I still don't buy that Niles would install anything himself. He says his contractor's out of town, but you know he would have begged Frasier for his contractor.
Yeah. That's a whole other...
So that is, that one part is suspicious, I will say.
So then Frasier is like, it seems like Niles might be subconsciously... trying to hurt you so that therefore Daphne has to stay because we know Niles wants Daphne to be here and the one way to get her to stay is to make Martin less well.
Right.
Which is the other... I will say, like, I love this episode. I think it is hilarious and I really love it when Frasier goes really... I can relate to Frasier and I love Frasier because it gets stupid farce. I do not like realistic Frasier. I do not like highfalutin Frasier. I love it when you realize Frasier is Three's Company with opera references.
Right, okay.
Because that's when I feel like it is coming down and meeting me on my level. I guess it's a residual child shit.
Mm-hmm.
As a kid, I always thought Frasier was talking down to me and making fun of me.
Right,
so I was like,
right.
No. But as an adult, realizing, no, the show is making fun of the opera references sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one of the things the show tries to establish, and it's in the theme song and it's in the basic premise in the beginning, it does not always do well, is that Niles and Frasier, I think when we see more radio therapy in the first few seasons, it actually works better because we need to see them giving good advice. Niles and Frasier are good at their jobs. The radio, sometimes less so, but they are good psychiatrists. But the dynamic, the dichotomy that they establish almost immediately in the beginning is that they can't apply it to their own lives.
Yeah,
they don't
like
take
real
their own
people,
advice.
Like, they don't know how to deal with Daphne, Roz, and Martin.
Right, well, not only that,
and
but Niles has...
Eddie, who is great.
Right.
They should all love Eddie.
That's right.
I do not understand why you wouldn't want that adorable, amazing dog living with you.
Well, more importantly, at no point does Frasier go, why do I resent this dog, right?
Yeah.
Niles has obvious, undiagnosed OCD and germophobia,
yes.
Right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, that's one of the first things we see about him is him wiping down a chair. It's in the first episode.
Yeah.
So we know that the premise is supposed to be, here are these psychiatrists who can see all these problems in other people, but they can't see their own neuroses.
Yep.
And I think some episodes do that really well, and other episodes don't really establish, like, yeah, that's why they're acting like idiots, or, like, that's why it is, like, this really zany plot,
yeah,
but with, like, high culture references instead of, you know, pop culture.
Because I really do love the gay panic episode in season, like, 8 or 9, where they go to the opera and Martin, like, they think that Martin is gay and they hook him up with, like, the woman that Frasier's trying to date's, like, mother's
friend.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's all that, like, because as my husband pointed out, is like that whole episode is Martin shitting on opera and like the show kind of be like, opera's so convoluted, it doesn't make any sense. But then the episode is an opera. Like the episode has all of the like misconnections, misunderstanding, and like immediate like falling in love at first sight kind of bullshit.
No wonder he understood. He nailed that. I didn't even catch that.
Yeah, which because I think we because my husband loves opera and he
That's important detail.
Yeah, he loves opera and has grown up loving opera. And there is a stupid regressive trope in all sitcoms that if you love opera, you're a bad character, or the character you're supposed to relate to should hate opera.
Right.
It's a Home Improvement. Jill loves opera, and Tim, your viewpoint character, hates it. It's so stupid and boring.
Right.
You know, and it's shitty. But
and I will say, as a person who was raised not high class, but by educators, and therefore to be intellectual, I think that one thing I do like about Frasier is that it so much of sitcom humor is like, oh, you're smart, you're just doing that for the attention. Like anytime there's a character that they determine is slightly smarter than the average viewer, that person is intelligent for the sole purposes of their own ego. And I one thing that I like about the show is, as egotistical as Frasier and Niles can be, the source of their intellectualism is not purely ego-based. And the show, I think the show attempts to be intelligent in ways that's not only... I mean, like I said, they have this great intelligence that they can't apply to themselves, and it shows that hypocrisy. But I don't... I feel like any other time you see a character like Frasier in a sitcom, the whole point is to be like, look at how pretentious he is, right?
Yeah.
Don't you hate pretentious people? Don't you feel really comfortable with how stupid you are?
Yeah.
Cool, watch this car commercial. That's why they exist. So we have to remember when they reinforce anti-intellectual tropes that they are... I mean, sitcoms exist to make us comfortable in a lot of ways. Sorry to tell you the thesis of the whole thing that you do a show about, but sitcoms do exist to make us comfortable. You put them on during dinner, and then you're lulled into a food coma while you watch a commercial, right? And
or if you're in the case of me, you have a crippling... You watch them and get crippling anxiety about how you cannot travel back in time and write for them.
There's also that possibility.
Which is my specific thing that I'm working through in my own therapy.
Well, but sitcoms being marketed towards the present-day audience are attempting to make the present-day audience
like
comfortable.
Me.
So I like the depiction of high culture without it always having to be... And you still have pompous characters, but it's not like, these guys are smart. Isn't that bad?
So there's... All this comes to a head because, like, Frasier wants basically to get Martin out because he has hooked up, like, a lingerie model, has finally called him back, and he's setting up a date with her, and there's, like, a night that she's coming over, and he just wants to be, like, down to clown. He wants to be DTF. He wants to be ready to woo and screw. And that night gets ruined because, meanwhile, over at Niles' place, Martin is now in a fucking, like, panic. Okay, two-pronged. Martin's in a panic because he's like, my son is subconsciously trying to kill me. He's getting signals of that. Like, Martin is not reading in. Like, he's not doesn't read in deep. Like, shit's crazy over there.
Well, Niles has a really good monologue where he seems like a serial killer.
I can't let her leave. I just can't.
Well, there's nothing we can do about it.
I still have a day. Just have to be more resourceful.
Like how?
It's my problem, not yours. Just have to think. Fresh air. Maybe that'll calm me down.
Oh, look at the sunset. Dad, come join me on the balcony.
Which makes me wonder, like... Because, again, the episode ends with, like, this all gets, like, you know, status quo is restored, and no one ever... How seriously was Niles trying to murder his father? Is the thing that, like, I love this episode and I think it's great. And as a farce, you can get away with this. But still, like, if you want to apply too much thought to it, it's like, how serious is he?
Okay.
About,
so,
like, trying to kill his dad.
And I have a couple of issues
with
this.
The episode doesn't treat it seriously, which I think is great, but...
Okay. So Frasier says unconscious, not subconscious. I'm not a psychiatrist, but I don't know that that's correct.
No,
I think that is
an IMDb goof.
Oh, really?
If you go to the goof section on this episode.
I didn't read that, but unconscious mind motivating his actions does not make sense.
No.
It's subconscious mind that they mean to be saying, which for a show about psychiatrists, get that
they
right.
They didn't have the internet. I mean,
he's supposed to be a Freudian Well, no, Niles is supposed to be a Freudian psychologist. I believe Frasier is
Jungian?
A Jungian psychiatrist.
By season 6, they should have this shit on lock.
Yeah.
You should
have
like
your writer
Bible.
Should know. I mean, that's I know that. Yeah. I didn't study any of this stuff. Like if you're writing, you should know at least the basic fact.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's a minor mistake. But again, coming back to the fact that Martin is a detective, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is not his first...
Rodeo?
Well, it's not his first exposure.
Which is the tape that starts off the whole episode.
Oh, yeah, Rodeo Bloopers. I love that. Yeah, the first argument is that Frasier taped over Martin's VHS tape of Rodeo Bloopers, and he's furious about that.
Martin is so my dad. Times.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing, that detail. But no, Martin's a detective. It's not the first time he's been confronted with the concept of ulterior motives,
yes.
of subconscious motivation, probably, of could someone have done something... I mean, this guy's been on multiple murder cases.
Oh, yeah.
Like, could someone have done something without thinking it, without doing it on purpose? Like, that's not a new concept. It should not be a new concept.
No.
However, in this episode, it blows his mind. He becomes obsessed with this idea that Niles could be subconsciously or unconsciously... trying to kill him. And it's like, you don't think that he's ever been exposed to that kind of concept before?
He's acting a lot like Shaggy when he should be acting like Velma.
Yeah, he should be more skeptical. He should be much more measured.
Because a lot of Martin in this episode, again, I love John Mahoney so deeply. But he's a lot of like, yoinks! Like,
yeah, oh, well, that's the thing.
But there's a great moment where he's like,
you sure you don't need a hand?
Just keep moving.
Yeah, where he changes tone very quickly.
Just keep moving. When, like, Niles offers to help him down the
stairs. Right. He won't take help from Niles. I think that's what I was saying earlier. I feel like Martin is inconsistently written, and John Mahoney just rolls with the punches. It's like, is this a wacky episode? All right,
I can do that.
Is this insanely heartfelt all of a sudden? I'm going to have to give the monologue that the episode's about?
Should have won the Emmys. Meanwhile, at Frasier's place, like, Frasier... This episode really does contain all my major questions. Because, again, like...
Is your question, why does anyone find Frasier attractive?
I mean, I can understand, being a gay man who has a specific type, I can understand why a certain subset of gay men could find Frasier attractive, because, like, dude's hairy. Like, Frasier's got a great chest that he fucking shows off in, like, one out of every three episodes.
There's a lot. I always wonder if Kelsey Grammer, by season two, was like, I'm only coming back if I can be shirtless, like, a fifth of the time.
It is all the time. It's
really frequent.
A solid, like, out of the 200
and
episodes.
And he's really sweaty a little bit, too.
I would say he's probably shirtless in a solid 100 episodes. There's, like, 250
episodes.
Much
airtime.
I think so. It's crazy. And I'm also including just him wearing a robe and nothing else.
Yeah,
which is
that's
also
plenty
a lot.
Of chest, yeah.
A lot. But again, there's a lot... Okay. So a lot of sitcom plots hinge on the lead being sexually desirable in order to get into predicaments.
Mm.
And so sometimes shows cast sexy people in those roles, and so therefore it's believable. If women did not find Frasier sexually attractive, that cuts off so many plots.
Right, you can't just do 14 episodes without a date episode. And there is, like, one stretch in, like, season 7 or 8 where it is, like, Frasier has, like, a drought or something.
Yeah.
And they make it clear that it has been a while.
But then, like, Frasier
but
only
for the most
ever
part,
gets models. It's like models.
Yeah.
It's beautiful women.
So it's this weird thing where he has, the, I guess, some degree of cash as being a celebrity, right?
Yeah.
Like, he is famous in so much as he's on the radio. He's on billboards, and he's a well-known socialite too. Like, he's an intellectual about town. So these people who travel in those circles, I'm not saying that's good or real, but this is how they
sell
it to us.
I want to do a survey of all my straight female friends.
Is Frasier
and ask like it, because it's another thing of pop culture and our culture will tell us like, well, women only find George Clooney attractive,
right?
I don't know. Women actually, there might like women might find Kelsey Grammer. Circa season 6 of Frasier.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely not 1 and 2 where he has that weird mullet. That weird, like, long, bald mullet.
It is
mullet.
Interesting how much hair he has in the beginning, and then they tighten it up as it goes on.
Yes, and that's where he looks. There's a season of Cheers where he also has a beard. He has short hair and a beard, and it's like,
really?
That's great. Like, yes, why get that look back? That's a good Kelsey Grammer look. And I'm also colored by just knowing that Kelsey Grammer IRL is a fucking maniac.
Oh, yeah, he's terrible.
Well, I mean, well, first, like, his father was murdered. When he was a teenager.
Oh, I did not know that.
Because when John Mahoney passed, like, Kelsey Grammer's reaction to it was like, oh my god, I will cry saying, like, you are my father, I love, he was my father, I loved him.
Jeez.
And then I looked up, like, what was Kelsey Grammer's relationship with his real dad? I was like, oh, his real dad was murdered when Kelsey Grammer was a teenager.
Maybe
when Kelsey
I've been
Grammer auditioned, to him. When Kelsey Grammer auditioned for Cheers, he was living in his car. Kelsey Grammer is also a, like, he's an alcoholic and a drug addict, and he...
and a Trump supporter, I believe.
He's a Republican. And there's also, there's like a season of Frasier where they wrote him out as going to like a conference for a couple episodes, because after the success of like the first 3 years, they gave Kelsey Grammer a Lamborghini or like some sports car that he then like got drunk and just crashed, and they like forced him to go to rehab.
I remember that, because there's like two episodes that he's not in, and I was like, oh, something happened
here. It's because they forced
him. And he's not pregnant, so.
Yeah. When a man is not on a show, it's mostly they are in a rehab.
Yeah, there's, that happens in sitcoms a lot, where you'd be like, huh, her cheeks are especially round this episode, and now she's not in the next three episodes.
Yeah,
like, oh, and they only shot her like from the neck up. I just noticed that.
That just happened on Will and Grace. Deborah Messing is pregnant, and for a couple episodes, she's just like out of the country.
Yeah,
and
they do that a lot.
So yeah, so Kelsey. So when I look at Frasier, I cannot disassociate him from just knowing that Kelsey Grammer is like kind of the opposite of Frasier.
Yeah, that's so strange.
It's like, good on Kelsey. Kelsey Grammer's a great actor.
I mean,
because I would have never known any of that shit if I didn't dive into
the
Wikis.
Yeah, no, I didn't know most of that. I mean, I only know his current kind of gross political and public presence, which I'm not a fan of. But
yeah, always been a little bit like of a maniac. So he is preparing for a sexy night where he has like the fire going. He's like turning on the music.
Doing here? We gotta talk.
Can I tell you what I wrote down? So I watched this episode the first time I watched this, which was late last night, and I just noticed my note here is, one of the worst parts about the show is imagining Kelsey Grammer as a sexual being.
Yep.
It really is.
Yep.
Like, I think it might actually be a testament to him as an actor, and I may be saying Frasier as a sexual being, but anytime Frasier's like setting the mood or like getting into sexy mode, it is the most revolting thing I can imagine.
I think this episode knows it is over the top, because it keeps getting undercut. It's undercut like three
times. Oh yeah, and they have him being like, he's like rolling his shoulders back. Yeah. And like, he's putting on the cheesiest like soft jazz music, like dimming the lights. Like, I think we're supposed to know that this is his cheesy seduction routine. However, I still don't enjoy watching it. It still genuinely disturbs me.
Because I feel bad for the laundry model just showing up to this like ineffective sex trap. Like,
yeah.
I feel like she'd walk in and be like, this is weird.
Yeah.
She is
inexplicably way into him.
Yeah. I mean, so, like, basically the episode ends with, like, Martin does not want to leave the apartment with Niles, so, like, go down the elevator and shift. So, like, Martin and Daphne go out first, Frasier's talking to Niles, and then they hear another scream from outside, and apparently, like, Daphne has unconsciously kicked the cane out from under Martin.
And Frasier, right before this, says,
please, Niles, surely it's occurred to you that your desire for Daphne is forcing you to behave in very strange ways. Or do you shove Dad down the stairs every day?
That was an accident.
Oh, Niles, any psychiatrist worth his salt knows that there are no accidents. No one would do something like that, however unconsciously, unless they stood to gain from it.
Ah! Oh, dear.
And then we find out that Daphne did the exact same thing.
Yeah.
So are they implying that Daphne, who's been crying over the change, doesn't want to leave. She first motivates it, but then she's back at Frasier's crying, ruining his date. One by one, they all show up, and he thinks it's going to be the lingerie model every time. And Daphne shows up crying, and then they're all back in the apartment, and she's crying again, because she's like, we're all back together. Like, she's clearly having regrets about this. So I guess they're implying that she subconsciously doesn't want to leave, doesn't want the status quo to change, which is very convenient for a sitcom, and she doesn't want the set to change, and so she has now subconsciously injured Martin in order to be necessary in his recovery process.
And while Frasier is like trying to get all them out of the hallway, because it's like this laundry model's coming, the elevator door opens as Frasier is yelling at an old man on the ground, screaming about his hip, and the model sees it and is disgusted, rightfully.
Yeah, she's like,
well, then doesn't he try to duck in the apartment, like, turn on the music? Or
he turns the music on, he's like, oh, hey, I didn't see you there.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
He makes a bunch of very ugly faces, but just like distraught faces, but then, like, tries to turn the seduction routine back on, and obviously it fails, and Rebecca shows up, is hot for 20 seconds at most, and then leaves.
And then the episode ends with Martin moving back in, and then we get the end credit scene of, like, a slow pan across everything going on. You see Eddie's walking around the table again.
Like he was at Niles' apartment.
They're moving the chair back in, and Frasier is standing there with his, like, head in his hands.
There's one more thing before that, which I actually really like, is one of the better parts of this episode, which is that, so they basically set it up, Frasier's life is perfect now.
Yeah.
He's gotten rid of his dad, he's got this date with a lingerie model, who seems really into him, he's listened to her voicemail twice, I believe.
So
there's a scene where he just listens to it, and
while drinking wine. And,
while drinking, sherry, in fact. And, they kind of set this up where, like, he finally has gotten exactly what he wants, and then he's waiting, he's set up the perfect date, and then Martin shows up, and then Daphne shows up, and then Niles shows up. Like, one by one, they sort of ruin it, and then it all falls apart when the model shows up and out of context sees him yelling at Martin and leaves. And there's this moment where they're, like, gonna move back in, and he's like, just give me a second. And he, like, sort of, like, staggers back into the apartment and grabs his glass of wine that he was gonna drink, and he just sits in a chair, and he's just, like, he looks on his face like just he's seen something horrific or something, and he's, like, gasping, and then he's just like,
all right, bring him in.
Oh, and it's a long, slow zoom in on Frasier's face.
It's a lot.
They don't do a lot of, like, motivated camera moves in this show also, and I almost wonder, because I don't know, I meant to Google this, is that a reference to something, the all right, bring him in line?
It might be from Dial M for Murder, which I've never seen.
Oh, okay, because there is this, like, long, slow zoom into Frasier's face, and then he says, all right, bring him in, and then Martin comes in. That's a great moment, and then it goes to the sting there.
Ah, what an episode.
Yeah, and Kelsey Grammer, to his credit, really does sell that joke.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's an impeccable cast. You ready for some must-have facts?
Yeah, sure.
But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again.
Good night!
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The ratings for this episode, 25.7 million people watched this episode of Frasier.
Wow.
That's a lot of people. For some reason, I Googled like a madman to try to find the weekly Nielsen ratings for the week this aired, which it's 1998, should be readily available. The site that I get all these ratings from, it ends the week before this episode aired.
What? Sounds like a conspiracy to me.
Yeah, I hate it. So I only have season rankings. So for the season, for the 98-99 TV season, the top five shows, get ready for this. Number five was a tie between Jesse and Veronica's Closet.
Okay.
Number four was Monday Night Football. Number three was Frasier. Two was Friends, and one was ER. The NBC Thursday night must-see TV lineup at that time was Friends, Jesse, Frasier, Veronica's Closet, and ER. So that is the entire must-see TV lineup.
Wow.
And Monday Night Football.
And football, which I guess is a TV show.
Yeah.
It seems like it should be a different category.
Yeah. But yeah, like, it's so fascinating to me. Like, this is the first year without Seinfeld, because Frasier, like, moved in to fill that void.
Oh, right.
I remember there being so much speculation. It's like, what could possibly fill Seinfeld's Thursday at 9, anchor slot? And I remember reading, like, Entertainment Weekly articles about, like, it could be this new show, Will and Grace. Like, it could be Rock from the Sun, which I think it started. And they chose Frasier. And I feel like, okay, I'm now reading... I feel like at that time I might have been... I was definitely team... I loved Third Rock from the Sun, so I might have also hated Frasier that it took Seinfeld's slot.
From like, potentially what one entertainment writer said could have been Third Rock from the Sun's time slot.
Curse. Or like News Radio. Like, if News Radio had gotten that slot, who knows what it could have... I mean, it could have also just tanked the Thursday night lineup because...
Might not have worked.
And probably wouldn't have worked.
But yeah, it is interesting. Frasier does seem like... Like, Seinfeld... I mean, I don't know. You watch Seinfeld, especially early seasons. The thing... I did a rewatch of that recently, too. Watching Seinfeld from the beginning is another show that's very different in the first three or four seasons than the rest of it when it gets very zany. It's a really New York show. I think going back and watching Seinfeld being like, whoa.
My first trip to New York.
And I watched it with my girlfriend who's from Iowa, and she was like, oh, these are grandparents are like, this is just like what grandparents are like. And I was like, these are all Jew jokes. Did you not catch? Like,
no,
it's
like,
very different.
It's so
experience.
Insane that, like, I'm from Murfreesboro, Smyrna, Tennessee, and we loved Seinfeld. Like, there was something about it that, I mean, like, it took, like, the thing is, like, it was so New York that it just took a long time to catch on. But then by, like, season five, I guess, like, Kramer's Universal.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's had weird neighbors, but it's in a city, it's in an apartment building, it's, young, you know, it's about a comedian for the most. I mean, it definitely, definitely moves away from being about a comedian as it goes on.
But it is so, I mean, my first time to New York, when I visited New York when I was a senior in college in 2005, like, summer before my senior year, I took photos of every Seinfeld thing I saw.
Oh, yeah.
Cigar Store Indian, a black and white cookie.
Did things you go to Tom's restaurant?
Yes, we went up there. Yeah, I went up there, took a photo of that. Like, I was like, where's all my Seinfeld shit?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's what's so funny about it is that, I mean, I guess that's what I'm saying. It's not so crazy because Seinfeld was a very New York show, but New York is, it's the reality of so many movies and so much media that it's not as crazy to have something set there. Frasier does seem like this outlier where it's like, oh, yeah, that would be a great, like, after the popular sitcom, like, it's an acquired taste. It takes place in Seattle. It's about intellectuals, but it's actually really funny.
I mean, I'll tell you, like...
It doesn't seem to me like that's the powerhouse sitcom that everyone in America is going to love.
It nearly worked. Well, because, like, Friends had ascended to this place where it could now carry the entire night. And so, like, Friends is the number two show. They could have stuck anything there. It was probably going to be okay. And, like, Frasier was, like, good enough hit. I mean, Frasier's the number three most watched show of that year, which is, frankly... insane.
That's pretty crazy. This is also in an era of TV ratings where, you know, what you say, 25.7 million
people
watch the show. Imagine getting that kind of ratings today. It's impossible. But...
This is, I mean, like, let's get into my, like, therapy
for, like,
time.
A mid-season episode.
I would kill to be able to travel back in time and be able to write for a show that did 24 episodes a year that were watched by millions of people, and then you got paid.
That's insane.
It'll never happen again. It can't ever, which is why I feel like, why am I even doing anything in my life?
Well, there are still sitcoms that run 24 episodes a season,
and they pay a lot.
But they are, they are.
Which,
kind
I mean,
of,
like, if I could figure out the way to make them good again.
Yeah. Or some of them have just been on the air for 20 years. I mean, like, you've got The Simpsons is still running, you've got shows like that are like, they do a ton of episodes every season, but... They're kind of holdovers, and like you think about what's a good sitcom network that's been introduced in the past 10 years that has staying power.
Well, multicam, because I think like there's a lot of good single cam ones. Your
Parks and
Rec, New Girl, like 30 Rock. I mean, even currently, like Great News is great, Good Place is great, but again, those are single cam, and I'm like,
also Good Place is like 13 episodes
a season,
which is a very deliberate choice, I think.
Yeah, that they still try to run. In the like September to May run,
right,
like just air all those in one half.
I know. It's a little strange, but that reality has, especially ratings wise, has really.
So IMDb, 378 IMDb users give this an 8.6 for a Frasier episode. As someone that's seen like all of them, do you think an 8.6 is a? Would you go higher, or lower? Is that on the money?
I would put this a little lower. I think some Frasier episodes... I had fun with this one. The performances are good. It's very all... Like yes, the joke is that it's like a murder mystery, that Niles is going to murder him, that it's all this crazy thing. Never really comes to fruition. There's this secondary plot about Frasier finally getting his perfect life. I was also wondering, like, I don't know... Do you think Frasier is trying to torture Niles when he brings over the squeaky toy?
Oh,
and the
definitely.
Chair?
Oh, yeah.
Like, so here's the thing. There's a lot of stuff that's, like, textual, but is never really, like, underscored in this that I thought, like, you know, maybe if you watch this in the context of the season, Frasier and Niles' rivalry makes it very clear why Frasier is doing that. It makes it very clear why Roz would screw Niles over that way. But this one, it's a lot of fun, and it's this sort of, the metaphorical relationship is the murder mystery, right?
Yeah.
Niles is the murderer. And, you know, Martin is the victim or something like that. And it's fun to watch them play that game. It's fun to watch them act that out. That said, there are Frasier episodes that are more wrapped up in, I think if you look at the first three or four seasons, the rapidity of the wit and the, you know, it's always like high culture reference, but that's not what's so funny about it to me. It's the incredibly tight joke writing. I think that's slowed down a bit by now, because now they're having more plot episodes.
This, like, this is a lot more physical comedy.
Like I said, the performance is still good, but I feel like the writing in an earlier episode is a lot tighter when it comes to, like, someone says something, someone says a double entendre on that thing, someone else says a double entendre based on that double entendre, and then someone else says a third joke that connects all three of them to the original non-joke line. Like, that's a hard thing to write, and there's a lot of that in the early seasons. So I was kind of missing that. And the other thing that I was missing is that, like, I didn't hate this episode by any means, but I think some of their episodes are very good. And, like, another one is that it's not quite a farce. Like, we know that some of the characters, like, Niles knows why he's doing it to move Daphne in. We know that Frasier knows that that's why Niles is doing it. You and I disagree maybe on whether Martin knows, but
it's kind of up in the air.
But they never leverage that information. There's never a scene in which two people thinking they're talking about the same thing talk about two different
Frasier
things
loves
to each other.
To
they
do.
Love those! But that's the thing. Those are my favorite. Like that. There's the, one of those Christmas episodes, which is when Niles is between Daphne and Maris. He's with the Mel, the plastic surgeon. And, you know, Frasier knows that Niles is in love with Daphne, and there's a lot of someone saying her, meaning a different person. And I think some of their plots, this is just basically a basic analog to a murder mystery. Some of their plots are these intensely written, like, manners play style farces that you do this whole multi-act farce in the course of a 23-minute episode. And so for me, the bar is set high as to how you can plot a Frasier episode. So, you know, I might put this one closer to an 8, high 7.
I'll go 8.6 just because I love a good John Mahoney episode.
Well, that's hard to say.
Who would you say had the must-see performance in this episode?
Well, I think that, you know, again, they don't give him a ton of depth in this. I think John Mahoney, in the section, it's very silly, but accepting the episode for what it is, the section in which he actually seems to think that Niles is trying to murder him, his reactions and his phases are very funny. Like, his physicality is great. And then my second one, and this is almost always the case for me with this show, is David Hyde Pierce is my favorite performer by a long shot on the show. His body language, just the discomfort in the way that he runs, the sort of holding his back stiff and his arms out.
Yes, he's so good in this.
There's that one line where you hear Martin in the distance say, like, what is it like?
Help me, I'm desperate.
Adams, which wall should I hang my swordfish on? None of them, I just had that room frescoed!
And he runs off, like, the way that he moves.
His arms are so stiff, and he's
it's funny. And then when he has that, like, I can't let her leave, like, the serial killer break, he plays that so well that, I mean, you watch the show, and obviously it's easier to like a side character because we don't have to dimensionalize them as much, and you often go, well, that guy's really the best actor, but maybe he wouldn't be as good as a protagonist. We don't know. But I do feel like watching this show, Kelsey Grammer is a good actor. David Hyde Pierce, I think, is a tier above. He's like a Shakespearean actor.
He's
really brings so much, especially when the character is conflicted. When you see Niles having to say something that he doesn't mean, is one of my absolute favorite things to watch David Hyde Pierce do. And there's a good amount of that in this episode.
I'll give my MSP to Eddie.
He's so good. He's such a good boy.
Honestly, every time I see him walking around on the tables, die. I love Eddie. Must other people see this episode? I would say, I mean, like, okay, there are definitely Frasier episodes to see that aren't this one that are, like, better or, like, good. But I do think, like, if you're going to run through, like, your top, if you're going to watch 10 Frasier episodes, I would make this one of them. Yeah. I would recommend that.
Yeah. All right.
I would do that.
I would say it's a good one. I prefer, I would say you should watch, go to season one, watch Miracle on 3rd or 4th Street, which might be my favorite Christmas episode, or the Christmas farce episode that I was talking about.
Yeah.
Watch both of those. Watch, My Dinner with Niles, the season one finale, where it's kind of him reflecting on the whole first season. And
I also like, you know, Room Full of Heroes is great, which is a costume party one.
Oh, the one we were just
like
talking about.
Later one, like,
That's a good late season episode. I don't know if I put this top 10. It's not bad. It's not what I like out of Frasier, which is really dense joke writing and good use of dramatic irony.
Yeah, I think if you want to see, like, Kelsey Grammer and John Mahoney and David Hyde Pierce giving really good performances, go for it. So let's move on to my new
Ooh.
My new segment that has just taken the nation by storm. We're going to be talking about a sitcom really briefly from the great TV sitcom book by Rick Mitz, published in 1983. For context, this book ends right as Cheers begins.
Okay.
And therefore, it has a whole lot of little one-season and two-season wonders as capsule reviews. So we're going to talk about one. And a side note is Rick Mitz has a little saucy personality, so the capsules might have some personal flair, so this is not written like an encyclopedia.
Oh, okay.
So when I'm flipping through the book, just tell me when to stop, and then we will discuss one of the episodes on that page.
All right. Stop.
Okay, so that is Rhoda, which is a multiple-page entry. We will skip past that. Where's the very first capsule? So you want to hear about Karen or Love Nest?
Oh, Love Nest, please.
Love Nest. Okay, so this is the 1974-75 TV season. Love Nest. After a pilot the previous season, this syndicated sitcom... That's a warning sign right there. This syndicated sitcom got underway, but briefly. Florida Freebus, she'd been Dobie's mama on Dobie Gillis, and Bob Newhart's ever-knitting Mrs. Bakerman on his show, played elderly Jenny Ludlow, who lived in a Florida trailer camp. Others in the show, Charles Lane as Ned Cooper, Alice Nunn as Mary Frances, Bert Mustin as Dickie Ewing, Dana Eclair as Mort, and Dee Carroll as Dorothy. So that's it. What was the show about? We have no idea.
Man, that really did not explain anything other than the cast. It's so it's just someone who played the side character on the Many Loves of Dobie Gillis.
So Florida Freebus, I love Florida Freebus. She was one of the main psychiatric patrons on the Bob Newhart show. I'm really glad this is giving me an excuse to talk about Bob Newhart.
Love that show.
So the Bob Newhart show, Florida Freebus played Mrs. Bakerman, who she was at times a like grocery checkout lady. She was, like, in her 60s, and she was always knitting, and everything was nice. She was so pleasant.
Oh, okay.
So I guess in 1974... Yeah, I mean, this was during her time on Bob Newhart. Well, this might have been early. Maybe this was right before. She had her own show, apparently, where she lived in a trailer park and had a whole bunch of kooky neighbors, and it was syndicated, so that means it wasn't even good enough to be on a network.
Huh.
Like, syndicated before the 80s is, like, this weird Wild West to me. So when I think syndicated, I think like, oh, Baywatch, you know, Star Trek Next Generation. It's weird to me think of like syndicated shows in the like even less advanced times.
So this isn't
like
syndication as in a network show hit enough episodes that it could run every day.
Well, this is syndicated of like, well, hey, no network wants to pick this up. We're going to just produce it on ourselves and just shop it around locally.
I see.
So like this show aired in, we don't know how many markets.
Okay. So it wasn't a major network. It aired on the major network,
but like at like 6 p.m. or 11 p.m. Right, or like whenever. So that's weird.
From your local, right.
Broadcast. So yeah. I mean, would you watch a show starring an old lady in a trailer park? Because that's really all we're going off of here.
If I'm at, like, the doctor's office, you know, waiting room, like, you know, if Kung Fu the Legend continues or whatever I was watching on TNT has gone to commercial.
Yeah. So yeah, that did not, I mean, that definitely didn't last long because she, oh gosh, that was a real spike.
Really,
she
really shut the book on her.
Harsher. Yeah. So sorry, Love Nest. Also, that's a weird title, Love Nest. Is her trailer the Love Nest?
Yeah, I was a little. I was hoping it would be a little more erotic than the way you described it, which was a list of the actors who are.
Yeah!
In it.
Also, I didn't recognize any of those actor names.
No.
Which is Florida Freebus, I definitely know. Bert Mustin, no clue.
No.
Anyway, thank you so much for coming out and talking about Frasier with me.
This was fun.
Where can people find you on the internet if they want to talk to you about Frasier? And what else can they find you online?
Oh, easy. So I'm on Twitter at Nat Towsen, TOWSEN. And if you are on the internet, coincidentally, as Brett mentioned earlier, I'm a writer and editor at Botnik Studios. And what we do is we use predictive text and other technological writing tools to write comedy and often parodies. And particularly, one thing we've been doing is we've been training predictive text algorithms on TV show scripts or comics or movies or things like that. And so that instead of suggesting, like your phone would suggest the next thing you're most likely to text, the next word you're most likely to choose, I created a Frasier keyboard made of Frasier lines of Frasier dialogue. So, you know, if you type Niles, it'll fill in with like, I think we should, or, you know, if you type cafe, it'll suggest Nervosa next and latte the second suggestion and, you know, and so on for several suggestions. So we sort of use these tools to write new versions of the things that we are processing. So, you know, someone else said it's a lot like magnetic poetry,
I think,
but with suggestions for the next word you use. So in using only words that existed in the Frasier scripts, we created a bunch of Frasier keyboards, one for each character, and we wrote a new episode. It's about 4 pages long. Yeah. A new episode in very serious quotes of Frasier. So if you go to Botnick Studios, it's botnick.org or Botnick Studios on Facebook or Twitter, you can see the Frasier episode that I had wrote and edited with a bunch of writers at Botnick Studios.
It is delirium.
It's a little insane. It's a pretty surreal Frasier episode, but I also think that we get to the heart of a lot of what you and I have been discussing tonight.
Yep. Yeah. Excellent. Definitely check that out.
You can listen to my podcast, the Rate and Subscribe podcast. Make sure you rate and subscribe, and you can listen if you want to.
Also, please rate and subscribe to my podcast, too, please. Dear God. Anyway, thanks so much for coming out and talking about this.
This was a great time.
Thank you.
For having me. Cheers.
Boom. Cheers. We should clink, right? And that does it for this week's episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guest Nat Towson for dropping by and talking about Frasier with me this week. Next week on the show, I will be discussing the Brady Bunch episode, Out of This World. Out of This World is in Season 5. It is Episode 16. That's Brady Bunch, Season 5, Episode 16, Out of This World. You can stream that Brady Bunch episode on Hulu or CBS All Access. Until then, I want to hear from all of y'all. You can go on and tweet your questions about sitcoms to @MustHaveSeenTV or send them to MustHaveSeenTV@gmail.com. You can follow the podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at @MustHaveSeenTV. And if you like what you've heard, rate and review the show in iTunes. The theme song is Patricia's Moving Picture by The Go Team. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to all y'all for listening, and I'll see you next week on Must Have Seen TV.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.